The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You will not be able to call in during the next hour. You can listen to past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice online anytime at ktna.org. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, streaming from ktna.org. This is Sioux Valley Voice. I'm Philip Manning. Today, I'm joined on the show by Jamie Spires and Kirsten Strohle from the Sunshine Community Health Center's Behavioral Health Department. April is Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we'll be discussing those very serious issues, trends in Alaska, what people can do to get help, and upcoming events in the area. So, Jamie, Kirsten, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So we'll start off with having you each introduce yourself and kind of describe your roles at Sunshine. Jamie,
Hi.
If you want to go first.
I'm Jamie Spires, and I am the Behavioral Health Assistant at Sunshine Community Health Center. It's a new position. We now have a 5-person department as opposed to CC just being the only provider. We now have 3 providers, Deborah Young, Sarah Blanning, and then there's myself and Kirsten.
All right. And Kirsten, your role? We've had you on the show before, but just as a reminder.
Yes. My role is the behavioral health case manager. So when the behavioral health providers refer someone to me, I'm able to help them with getting to their appointment and with resources and referrals and things like that.
Okay, great. And as we go on through the show, if anybody out there listening wants to join the conversation, the number to call 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org, and we'll do our best to get to those questions and calls as we go through. So to get us started, like I mentioned at the very top, April is Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and so I understand that we can start by talking a little bit about, I understand there's some events coming up regarding that, Jamie.
Yes, we're going to be having the Choose Respect March and Rally April 15th, and it's going to be basically the same kind of march that has been annually done, but we're going to start from the Squirrel, we're going to end up at the Overlook, and we're going to have a picture opportunity, because I really want to kind of tell people out in the state that we are still doing this and we're still going strong. I'd like to get a good photo and send it to the governor, maybe, you know, just okay. Kind of get the word out. Then from there, we're going to come in and be at NSI for the rally portion. And I would really encourage anybody who's interested to come on down.
Okay. And so from the Flying Squirrel Bakery Cafe to the Overlook. And then so once we'll get into more details of the rally at NSI and what's going to be going on a little bit later on. But I want to cover a little bit more of why this is happening. And so Choose Respect, if I'm not mistaken, was started under the Parnell administration.
Yes.
4 or 5 years ago, and has kind of been going ever since in communities around the state. And one thing that I think does get a decent amount of discussion, but I think always bears repeating, is the actual rates of intimate partner violence and sexual violence that occur in the state of Alaska. And University of Alaska has helped University of Alaska Justice Center does these victimization surveys that poll people about, you know, what their own life experiences are. And the most recent result I've got here is from 2015. And the numbers there are that out of every 100 adult women in the state of Alaska, 40 have experienced intimate partner violence, 33 have experienced sexual violence, and 50 out of 100 half have experienced one or both. And so obviously there's a lot of overlap of people who have experienced both. And then in the Mat-Su Valley, the numbers for the valley are a little bit older. They're from 2013, but they're also higher. And so you've got 46 out of 100 have experienced intimate partner violence, 34 out of 100 have experienced sexual violence, and 53 out of 100, so a little bit more than half, have experienced one or both. So it just kind of, every time I see those numbers, it's a little bit shocking because we hear about it and there is a big awareness effort going on, but just how much it actually goes on is always a little shocking to me.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of the stats memorized, but I have a sheet here. I don't know if Kirsten wants to speak more to that. She kind of has a lot of those things memorized better in her head. She's more mathematical, I think. But it seems as if it's twice the rate as the rest of the nation, which is staggering.
Right. And those sort of numbers are what kind of prompted the Choose Respect and other programs to get started. But I want to, while we're kind of at this basic early level here, I want to talk a little bit about and clarify what we mean when we talk about domestic violence, intimate partner violence. What all does that cover and entail? Kirsten?
Well, I think, you know, for intimate partner violence, it's a little bit different. It means more your partner is committing the act of violence, where domestic violence, I feel like, could be between, you know, sometimes it is a adult child and a parent, or it's someone that's more in your household. So they can mean a little bit different things, but we tend to just generally think of it as intimate partner violence, I think.
Okay. And so even when we talk about violence, are we necessarily talking about someone being physically struck, or where's the spectrum lie there?
It goes all over. I mean, it could be financial abuse, you know, taking away someone's money and making it so that they have to rely on you for everything. It could be controlling the phone. Let me see your phone. Let me see who you've been calling. Calling
emotional.
You, yeah, emotional, you know, calling you at work a dozen times. It could be, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to commit domestic violence before it actually gets to a violent incident.
It's really all about control and the person feeling they have a lack of control in their life. And so they go to someone who they perceive as being weaker and trying to get that control filled in their life.
Okay.
It's a power struggle.
Right. Okay. That's what it, based on what Kirsten was saying, that's definitely what it sounded like. And so that kind of covers the very broad spectrum of what can be involved in domestic violence. And so when we talk about sexual violence, by the same token, is that limited to actual physical contact, or what sort of other things, if any, can be involved there?
Well, weren't we just talking about certain people taking pictures of others and using those as kind of leverage? And that could be portrayed as being harassing and sexually harassment. So that could be violent, too.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be physical. It typically is known for that, though.
Right. Obvious. Right. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's kind of what we think of. But I wanted to kind of touch on the fact that there is potentially more, you know, that could fall under that umbrella. So if somebody's in a situation where it's like, oh, well, you know, person X never actually touched me.
Right.
So I must not be a victim.
Right.
Or I never touched person X, so I must not be an abuser. And so I just wanted to delve into that a little bit and see where the spectrum lies. So speaking of victims and abusers, I want to get into a little bit more into the who of this situation. You know, we've talked about that this obviously is a major problem in the state of Alaska. The state has come right out and acknowledged it for recently, at least. But when we're talking about who does this impact, is there a type, either for victims or for abusers? Or is this something that can happen anywhere, anytime, to anyone?
I would argue that it kind of goes a little both ways.
Okay.
That you could say absolutely not, it happens to everyone. But then you could also argue that certain types of people tend to be abusers or be abused because of their past with violence. So if they are used to it, they might tend to not notice it for a while and just let it happen, and then all of a sudden they are now being abused. So I don't know what your opinion on that is.
I would agree with that. I think a lot of times it starts slowly.
Okay.
Right.
So you might think it's a little strange. The person is a little bit more paying attention to you than normal, but it wouldn't come out as direct abuse right away. Usually that's a process. So I feel like it could happen to anyone just because it is such a slow process. But if, you were abused as a child or were sexually assaulted as a child, statistically, the likelihood is obviously much higher that something like that will repeat.
Right, because you're used to that lifestyle. It's like being in an, like, say your parent is an alcoholic. You grow up in that alcoholic lifestyle. You think that that's normal. So when you become older, you think, oh, I'm just doing what's normal. But it's actually not, and it could be harmful.
Okay. And so what you're both describing here reminds me of another topic I wanted to bring up that's very much related, and that's adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. And what you've both described here seems to fit that category very much. And so can we get a kind of a brief overview of what ACEs are and what they and why we're paying attention to them a lot more than we used to?
Okay, so there was a study done, I think it was started in, I want to say 2012, but like I said, I don't have the stats and dates in my head. And they started kind of taking people and figuring out, oh, these things happened in your life. It could be one of your parents was incarcerated, or there was domestic violence in your life, or there was sexual assault. And they started rating and calculating all of this stuff. And they found out that people who have one, just one of these adverse things in their life, they have a much higher rate of heart disease, suicide, alcoholism. And so they started really putting some money into studying it and finding out that if you have two or more, it pretty much doubles. And so they wanted to get that out into the public because it's all about education. If we can stop these adverse things from happening to people when they're young, perhaps they will be able to live longer. Do you have any other info on that?
Well, I know that there was a documentary shown at the Sheldon Community Arts Hangar not long ago that I watched that focused on that, and they said that there is this stair step
dramatic
risk factors for not only behavioral health and mental health issues that can arise, but actual literal physical health, because as a child they equated it to, there are chemicals in your body like adrenaline and cortisol. That if you suddenly there's a truck coming at you, those chemicals help you spring to action and stay alive. But if you're in an environment where you feel like there are constantly trucks coming at you and your body is constantly having this response, then it changes the way that your brain chemically reacts to these things.
Right, because there's pathways in your brain, and it's you get used to certain things, and this is how you do habits, and you go from here to here, and that's what you do. So your body's doing the same thing, and it's about the flight or fight or freeze. And some people with PTSD, for instance, it's not their fault. That's what their body is conditioned to do. That's their defense mechanism. Some people are instantly, I'm going to fight or flee the situation. And it all comes from how their body has learned to deal with their adverse childhood experiences and their stress response.
Right. And so it's interesting that, we've known for a long time that, or it's thought for a long time that, okay, of course, your childhood, how you were brought up, that sort of thing, habits, that all has an impact on you. But some of the studies that have been coming out recently seem to indicate that it's even stronger than I think than the medical community thought for a long time, and especially these links to physical health issues, because, too much adrenaline and cortisol isn't particularly good for your heart.
Oh, no, not so good for you.
So, yeah. Okay, and I don't have the list here in front of me of all of the ACEs, but I know that it's pretty easy to find if people want to kind of take a look at it for themselves. And And one thing about it is in this documentary was, you know, it was focused on this idea of resilience. And so obviously it's impossible to prevent all of these things from happening to people. But this idea of kind of helping people cope and help them, you know, as recognize, okay, this happened, but how do we move forward with it?
Yeah. Through working at the clinic, I've been able to go to a lot of trainings on resiliency and trauma-informed care, and I'm really grateful because I've learned a lot about resiliency and the difference between that and trauma. Everybody has trauma in their lives, a car accident or, you know, a death in the family, and it's hard, and we deal with it. That's how life is. We're supposed to have some pain in our lives. It teaches us to be better people. You know, it guides who we become. But these traumatic events, traumatic trauma is different, and that's what we're talking about with the ACEs. And one of the things I learned in some trainings is that through having trauma, you become resilient. You cannot become really resilient if you do not have adverse things happen in your life. But that's kind of a catch-22, because don't we all want to have a really happy, lovely life? But it makes you be a beautiful person if you have these things and you overcome it. So
right. Well, and there's, it seems like that there is kind of a lot, like you should, everybody's going to have some degree, but the once it gets to a certain point, that's when it can become, can have these really lingering,
toxic.
Toxic stress, I think, was a term that was used a lot in that documentary as well. So it was very informative, and I know that there were a decent number of community members that showed up to watch it as well as some folks from the schools. So that gives us kind of a baseline on ACEs. And if anybody out there listening, again, if you want to join in on the conversation, if you have any questions or comments, the number to call is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. And so we've kind of gone over the spectrum of what violence can look like, whether it's domestic violence, sexual violence, who it impacts, you know, some of the long-term effects through, especially on the very young, through things like ACEs that can then turn into contributing factors later on. But I want to get into now sort of the how and why. So one of the things that I think is kind of leaving the lexicon now, but for a long time was something that would come up a lot was, you know, if someone's in a situation of domestic violence, in particular, the reaction is, well, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just get out? And so I want to talk about that. What are some of the factors that can make that difficult?
There are a lot, especially living in a rural community. It's much harder than people think it is. Some of the factors could be, you know, is there financial reliance on the other partner? That's a huge thing. There's no free housing up here. There's very little housing, even if you have money to rent it. So, you know, having to leave the community for services, you know, the nearest shelter is in Wasilla. That can be a big deal if you aren't used to being around big crowds or a lot of smells, a lot of people, a lot of colors. It can be overwhelming to your senses as well as all the planning that has to go into it. If you have children, having to pick them up out of school and either leave the community or finding a new place to live and actually move out. And, you know, the response times for troopers, it can take a while for them to come up and be able to help.
Even transportation.
That's a huge one. And we do have funds at the clinic for families in crisis, and we have been able to help people get down to Wasilla, but it still takes a little bit of planning.
Okay.
So there's a lot of factors that can impact it.
So there's just beyond any sort of emotional, there's just straight up logistical issues in this area.
It's unfortunately, it kind of seems like it's one of those things where if you are not in the situation, you might not know how difficult it is. I mean, just little things like if you have to leave right now, that means you have to leave all your precious items at the house. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that person might be, oh, well, look what this person left behind. I'm going to burn them now. Mm. So fear, and that kind of is what people keep you tight. It's the fear that keeps you there.
It kind of goes back to that control that you were talking about earlier.
And it is the most dangerous time is leaving.
Okay. And is that just because there's potential for sudden escalation?
Yes. So when someone says, if I leave, the person may kill me, I tend to listen to the person and try to plan on how we can do it in the safest way for them. Because it can be a very serious threat.
All right.
Or pets. They could threaten to kill your pets.
Yeah, it sounds like there's any number of ways that they can kind of that an abuser can sort of spark that fear of retaliation in whatever way. I mean, even even again in a small town, you know, word travels quickly, and so even just on a social level, it seems like that would be a risk factor as well. And so, Kirsten, you touched on some of the resources available, that there are resources available for people who may be in a situation and feeling overwhelmed, but know that, okay, I've got to do something. So can we take a moment and kind of talk about what is available? What can people do if they need that help to try to get out?
Yes, they can call the clinic or they can walk into the clinic and talk either with Jamie or myself, or if we have one available, a behavioral health specialist. There's Alaska Family Services in Wasilla that can help, and there's Awake in Anchorage. Those are some of our closest resources. For sexual assault, they're Standing Together Against Rape in Anchorage as well. And Alaska Family Services actually does quite a bit with that too.
Okay. So,
the Families in Crisis Fund is a good one at the clinic where we can help people get out of the community if they need to, or, you know, if they need help getting reestablished, we have some funds we can help with.
And we've been using that quite a lot this season, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
So just to kind of help smooth out some of those logistical issues that you were talking about earlier.
Maybe someone needs gas. Maybe someone, you know, needs some food. They've left and they need some food.
Yeah, and even, you know, just to get a protective order, you have to go twice to Wasilla. And if you don't have the money, then that can be a big, and it's in Palmer, sorry. But if you don't have the money, it can be a big barrier. But, you know, the clinic is able to help with that. If it was reported to the police, there's also violent crimes compensation that can help with some of those things.
Okay.
So really just reaching out and making the first phone call.
Yeah.
And kind of figuring out a plan from there.
And so my number is 733-9207, and Kirsten, you're 733-9232.
Yes.
Okay, so those are, so people can call y'all, either one of you directly, if they're in that sort of situation where like, okay, I've made the decision, I need help, I want to get out of this.
Yep.
They can call you directly during, and y'all are there during work days?
Yep, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Okay.
So if it's after that, I would definitely call Alaska Family Services or the Troopers.
Okay. And they can help with that. So, well, hopefully that's helpful to folks to know that there are some kind of on-demand, on-call resources available. And while we're kind of talking about the how and why this sort of thing happens, which I know is an enormous topic that we could never hope to cover. But I feel like we've touched on it a bit with, you know, ACEs and that sort of thing. But is there, what sort of conclusions, if any, have been reached on what leads people to commit these crimes, to become abusers? Because, you know, all too often it seems like on the outside, from a third party perspective, they don't seem like always like a bad person to someone viewing from the outside. So what causes that? Do we know?
That's a very good question, Philip. Thank you for throwing that our way. I mean, one could argue that it goes back to basic, nurture, or, you know, it could be they didn't have enough in their lives early growing up, you know, and they just felt that they needed more. They became angry. It could be that they were just, you know, they were born that way. Some people are. But I would say that it's kind of a combination of everything. Growing up in a poor family, growing up in a family that has domestic violence happening regularly. And if you have all of these different things in your bag, you're probably more likely to be that type of person who feels they need to try to control other people.
Hmm.
And maybe people have had these adverse things in their life, but they somehow resiliently come out and they're not that way. Doesn't mean that they won't be triggered to in some instance because of something that happens that they just can't control. Their body just, they can't handle it, and they decide that they're going to try to, you know, treat someone badly.
Mm. So in those cases, I mean, again, we've talked about the whole spectrum of what abuse can cover. And if someone out there either knows or suspects that maybe they are the abuser in a situation, we've talked mm-hmm. about resources for the victims. But if there's a case of someone out there who's like, oh, my gosh, this is me, what can they do? How can they reach out for help?
Alaska Family Services offers some classes for people that have committed acts of domestic violence, yeah. or they can, you know, if it's not court ordered, then they could come to the clinic and meet with a behavioral
Absolutely.
Health specialist for counseling. Or, you know, a lot of times drugs and alcohol are involved. Mm. So they can also seek treatment for that either at the clinic or through AA or a program.
Okay. Yeah. Because it seems like there's a lot of the levels of abuse that don't necessarily rise to the level of crime where somebody would necessarily have had the troopers called on them, where they're actually striking someone or destroying
right.
property.
Just like under the radar.
Right.
Yeah. And it would be really great if people were aware of themselves and able to, you know, self-report and come in. Statistically, though, people are, they're mandated by court to come in, and they're forced to, which means it doesn't necessarily... it doesn't take as easily. People don't, when you're forced to do something, you're kind of like, oh, well, I'm just going to half listen. But if
right.
you do it yourself, you really want the help.
Right, right. And that makes total sense, that if you make that decision on your own, that it's going to be that much more likely. Just like when someone is seeking treatment for addiction. I
yeah,
mean, it sounds like the
exactly.
exact same sort of thing.
Well, and they found that the classes aren't, that people who have been victimized tend to take the perpetrator back if they've been through a class.
Mm.
And they found that there was a really interesting study, and it was a really long time ago that I read it, but it talked about testing the perpetrator's brains for psychopathy. Are they even able to show empathy?
Sure.
And I don't believe that we do that here, but, you know, it's always a good thing to be aware of. Just because a person has completed treatment, it doesn't mean that, you know, all is well.
Right.
It could still happen again.
Well, and especially with an issue like you just brought up, and Jamie, like you mentioned earlier, if somebody does have an actual, you know, sociopathy, psychopathy, something along those lines where it's not the traditional methods and classes and talking, it's not going to work
yeah.
on some people.
Yeah.
Just because that's not how the way that their brain yeah. operates.
Yeah, we're all different.
We are all different. We are all different indeed. Well, we're getting close to the bottom of the hour here, so we're going to take a break here in just a moment. My guests are Jamie Spires and Kirsten Strolle from the Sunshine Community Health Center Behavioral Health Division. We're talking about Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about that and get into a little bit more about things that are being done both locally and around the state in order to address this huge issue. Again, 50% of women, adult women around the state report either intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both in the course of their lifetime. And if you want to join in on the conversation in the second half of the show, the number to call 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org, and then I will read your question on the air. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more Sioux Valley Voice on KTNA. back for the second half of Sioux Valley Voice. I'm your host, Philip Manning, joined in studio by Jamie Spires and Kirsten Strolle from the Sunshine Community Health Center's Behavioral Health Division. We're talking about the issues of domestic violence and sexual assault awareness. And we've covered quite a bit of ground already, but of course, this is one of those topics where we could easily go all day if we had the time to. So we stopped off on kind of how people can reach out and can get help, whether they're the victims or the abuser, or, you know. But one other follow up I wanted to do on that is third parties. So if you know someone who's in that kind of situation, on either end of it, what are some of the more positive reactions that people can have? I mean, I think a lot of people, there's still a bit of a mentality of, well, it's not necessarily my business.
Yeah.
So.
Well, then that goes into the community component of what happens in your community is also, you know, what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And what you are is what your community is. So I would say just be as supportive as possible. Don't assume that you know better than this person because you don't live their life.
Hmm.
Help them in whatever way you can, as kindly and, just supportive as you can. That's what I would suggest.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you can express concern and ask them, how can I help you? What would you like me to do?
Hmm.
And let them kind of guide on it. They're the experts of their situation.
Okay. So just as simple as asking, as broaching the topic, it seems like, which, I mean, especially if it's some, you know, a friend or a family member or something like that, that's got to be extremely difficult to do.
Right. But, I mean, they might want to talk to you. They just might not know how. And right. So if you just show some concern, they're more likely to open up, you know.
Hmm.
Just say, how are you doing today? Mm-hmm. Or I've noticed you've been having a hard time. It seems to me like you might need to talk.
Mm.
Something that simple might bring out a flood.
Or it might not.
Yeah. Right, right. And don't push. I mean, maybe they're not ready. You know.
And there's a lot of feelings about it. I mean,
right.
The person might be embarrassed or ashamed or this can't happen to me, so it's not happening to me, and just
right.
Be in denial about the situation.
Okay, but just kind of always being able and willing to be there and be that outlet if they need it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we move on, I do want to give out the phone number again, 733-1200 with your questions or comments, and or dj@ktna.org via email. So we talked a little bit at the top of the show about statistics statewide and in the Mat-Su Valley. It looks like you've got some more detailed statistics on some of the things that have been going on, and I'd like to get into that a little bit, because while statewide the findings from UAA's Justice Center study was between 2010 and 2015, the overall rates for domestic violence, sexual assault as a combination have fallen somewhat, but it seems like there's other areas where the things have gone up, some where they've gone down. It's not a uniform picture.
Right.
Yeah.
And
so,
I'll let Kirsten speak to that.
Okay.
It looks like, you know, the number of domestic violence-related homicides reported to law enforcement still says that needs improvement. So it looks like it actually went up.
That was the one that really caught my eye.
Yeah. It went up 120%, according to this. So that's pretty huge. And we know that there's been a few reported in the media this winter.
Right, right.
And then it looks like the rates of child sexual maltreatment have went up, and the percent of adults exposed to intimate partner violence of a parent has went up. So it looks like we've made progress, but there's still a long ways to go.
Right.
For sure.
Well, and Jamie, something you mentioned is that during the break is that sometimes those numbers, it can be tricky to determine why those numbers are going up, because it could be as simple as, now obviously in the case of homicides, that's
right,
fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
But a small number of incidents can cause a large percentage increase. But in these other areas, it could be people are reporting more. It could be, mm-hmm. So it's still hard to get a handle on whether or not these things are happening more, or whether or not the environment's just more conducive to people talking about
right.
it.
Right. Maybe, you know, because the awareness is being put out there and people are feeling more comfortable to come in to report, it could be that's why the rates are higher for certain things.
Right.
So it's good and bad, you know.
Right. It is kind of this mixed bag. But I mean, I guess it's obviously it's hard to address a problem unless you know the actual extent of it. So in a sense, I guess even an increase in reporting or an increase in our ability to know when these things are happening is you've got to be able to have that in order
yeah.
to do something about it. So. Okay, well, I wanted to talk a little bit about, we mentioned at the top of the show some of the events that are going to be going on a little bit later this month, and I want to revisit that, and then we'll hit it again at the end of
Great.
The show. So you mentioned, you know, there's going to be a march from the Flying Squirrel Bakery Cafe to the Overlook just mm-hmm. above town below Ski Hill, and that's on the 15th?
Yep, April 15th. Yeah, this year we decided to kind of make it a bigger event, invite some organizations, nonprofits, business members together into one group and say, hey, everybody, we support this initiative. This initiative came from Governor Parnell, and now it's Governor Walker. And unfortunately, throughout the state, for all sorts of different things, funding has been dropped. So in starting this event, I found out that a lot of different communities are actually not holding this event anymore. So this is kind of a test run to see how we can get this community together, if it's still important to us, and just to, if it is our last hurrah, make it a really good push. So what I decided to do is make it kind of a full-day event from the Squirrel to NSI. And the march can be really fun. People bring signs. You can bring costumes. You can promote your business or just, you know, something crazy about yourself. You know, like, I love Choose Respect, or, you know, I am against violence in our community. I've got the Bachelors online a little bit, so maybe you'll be there, Philip.
Maybe so. I'll be there covering it at the very least.
Oh, great. And so at 1 o'clock, I want to get a picture, and I want to be able to send that around the state and hopefully send that to Governor Walker to help him know that this is still important. Then from there, we go to NSI, and that's where there will be some tables and booths maybe. There will be some kid events, keep the kids kind of happy and have some little prizes. We're hoping to do some workshops and maybe have some speakers.
Okay, and so it does sound like, because I've covered some of the past Choose Respect events, and there have been numerous marches. I remember the first one I ever covered. The troopers showed up and
yeah.
got out of their car and walked with folks. That's when there were more troopers and some stationed
right.
in the community.
I'm working on that.
but then yeah, afterwards there was, you know, there were kids' activities and things like that. But it sounds like there's more. There's going to be more opportunities for people to get information, to find out ways to help, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so the clinic's going to have all sorts of information out. So that in that respect, it is like a health fair. So we will be promoting the different services that we have and things that we can offer people. We will also be having some businesses and then some other nonprofits, hopefully, saying, you know, this is what we do for our community. Would you please like to help? And we support this initiative in our community.
Okay.
So kind of just well-rounded event.
Okay. And so let's see. And then you were talking about the possibility of workshops and speakers. Would that be on that same day
yep.
or kind of surrounding?
On the same day. What's really exciting this year is that the clinic is partnering up with Rock Matsu, which is Raising Our Children with Kindness. And they're going to be doing a community baby shower at the same time. So that focuses on promoting family health and well-being to young parents around the Upper Sioux Valley here. And so we get to do just a lot of different things, little giveaways. We're going to be doing, I hope, some baby massage, some aromatherapy, some quick 15, 20 minute workshops, and then maybe have a presentation on ACEs or something along those lines.
Okay. So while there is obviously going to be a lot of focus on this very serious, kind of heavy topic, there are other yes. aspects as well.
Yeah.
And to make it more of it seems like kind of just a family centric and community event as a whole.
Right. It's all about awareness and getting the education piece out to all different ages.
Okay. And so if people want more information about how this is going to be happening, or, you know, what other speakers and workshops might eventually end up getting confirmed, finalized, that sort of thing, how do they find out about that? Is there a Facebook presence?
It is on Facebook, and I'm going to be sharing that here pretty soon. I think it's on the clinic website, and you can call me at 733-9207 if you are interested in being in a workshop or having a table or any of those things. I will welcome just about anybody, so...
All right.
Everybody.
Yeah. So we, so if anybody does want to join in on the conversation at this point, the number is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So we've talked a lot thus far about what Sunshine Community Health Center can do locally. We've also talked a little bit about Alaska Family Services, Star, Awake. There's a lot of these groups around the state, you know, and even beyond that, I know at the law enforcement level there is, and it's been going back and forth on how well it's being funded, but there's the sexual assault response team in the Lower Valley. Do you know, do they respond to this area as well, or is that primarily a Palmer-Wasilla sort of thing? Because I know it's done through law enforcement.
It is done. It's usually law enforcement, an advocate, and then a nurse examiner. The person would either drive themselves or I know in Anchorage the law enforcement was responsible for transporting patients down there, and they would meet, I believe it's at the hospital, and they would do the exam and the interview there. Usually.
Okay.
I do think that a trooper will come and pick you up here. Yeah. I think I remember an instance where someone did take the trooper in. That is awkward sometimes because it's typically a male trooper and it's typically a female victim. And it's a really long ride, really long and uncomfortable. So, I encourage people to do that because getting that test is really important. But I do understand why it's hard for people to make that decision.
Right. Okay. So, you know, we've talked a lot about awareness and what people can do after the fact. But, you know, really, I think a big part of awareness is not only response to what's happening, but prevention for the future. And we hear a lot, particularly on the sexual assault front, you hear, you know, the term rape culture a lot. And there's a lot of talk about what's going on at, you know, colleges and universities. And this topic has kind of been blown wide open in the past few years. So when it comes to prevention, what sort of things are important to preventing this sort of awful thing from happening to people in the future? And what can, again, in a small community with limited resources, what are the options?
Well, I just go back to education, and that's hard, but because sometimes the funding is not there, but you can also educate yourself. You can reach out to people, have conversations, go to the clinic, ask some questions from your providers. That's my suggestion. Mm. Educate yourself.
Well, there is no 100% proof way to prevent something like this from happening, but I would say if you're beginning in a relationship and you're starting to feel like you're no longer in charge of your life, that's something to pay attention to. Or if you have that inner voice telling you something about this is just making me really uncomfortable, I would say that, you know, to honor that intuition and, you know, research more into the warning signs,
right,
to see if maybe they're lining up for you.
kind of seems like we're taught in our society to ignore our intuitions.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you're just being silly.
Or overreacting.
Yeah.
Or,
and I think that we all do have this gut feeling inside of us. And if you feel a certain way, listen to yourself. You can put some personal thought into it and ask yourself, am I just being silly or is this something I should worry about? But initially, if you have that thought, you're right, Kirsten. You should, you know, honor your first feelings.
Yeah. There's a book called The Gift of Fear that talks a lot about how, you know, intuition is something that's been built over generations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a survival skill.
Right.
Yeah. But we tell women to ignore it all the time. You're being hysterical or, you know.
Right.
So I think that, you know, that's a good book to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's some really good resources out there.
And, you know, even one of the tips from the book is that if you need help, like if your car is broken down or something like that, don't wait for someone to come offer you help. Pick someone and go ask them. Because if someone has, you know, bad intentions, they often seek someone out in a vulnerable position. And so by going and asking someone, you're not, you know, you're not giving that vulnerability.
Right, right.
You're taking charge of the situation.
I had never thought of that, but that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book.
So
yeah, different perspective.
You know, and something else that we've mentioned kind of during the course of this, but the vast majority, though by no means all victims of domestic violence and sexual assault are women, women and girls. So is there, my mind keeps going back a couple of months to the series of women's marches that happened around the country. Is there an effort, and you may not be able to speak to this totally, but something that's been on my mind is, do you see an effort for people to kind of acknowledge this, you know, societal pressure that's been put on women and that, you know, men and other women kind of perpetuate?
Yeah.
Is there movement for change on that at this point?
I'd say yes, but
personally, we all want to say like yes, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, personally, I think that it does look like there is some momentum for change, and even the dialogue is somewhat changing. You know, there was recently an article about a guy was taking pictures of a lady at a bar for without permission. And it was really interesting in the comments because she got really upset. She confronted him, asked him to delete it. He refused. It became a scene with security. And
so now it's like a social issue.
In the comments, the thing that kind of disturbed me the most were that so many people were pointing out, it's legal. You were in public. You didn't have the right to privacy. So this guy can take pictures of you and your friend's butts. Like, well, that's still sexual harassment.
Right.
If you did that in your workplace, you would be in big trouble, if
hopefully
not fired and sued. Like, you know, so I think that there is movement on even talking about these issues.
Right, yeah. That there is a line beyond just, well, you know, right to privacy. Because I know that's, as a reporter, that's something I've run up to against, obviously not a situation like that, but as far as what you're allowed to record and photograph in public is legally, yes, there is one thing, but at the same time, ethically.
Yeah.
There's a very different line. That's very interesting to because it's something that obviously is kind of at the forefront of a lot of discussion right now. And of course we won't dive into the politics of it, but regardless, there does seem to be, we're hearing a lot more than we did even just a few years ago about what's actually happening and what's going on. So all right. Well, we do still have about 10 minutes left in the show, so enough time if somebody wants to give us a call, 733-1200, or send an email to dj@ktna.org.
Call us, folks. We want to hear from you.
They want to talk to you. So something that I want to, as we kind of start to wrap up the show here, you've both mentioned a lot about educating yourself. And Kirsten, you've mentioned some articles, books, those things that, so if someone is in a position where they're like, yes, I want to know more about, you know, what's going on, how people, you know, what research has been done, what do you, further reading recommendations, I guess, is the best way to put that.
Ooh, that's a good one. And you're on. Okay, so from me going through social work school with UAF, there's a lot of really good things that that I read up on. I chose to focus on domestic violence for personal and other reasons, kind of making that my emphasis. So I don't have this was a pop question.
Phil. Yeah, sorry.
I don't have a list of books, but if you want to know, you can call me at 733-9207 at my work, and I will put together a list of stuff for awareness. That would be a good idea.
Okay.
Well, STAR's website, I think it's staralaska.com, they do have a list of books on their website.
Ah, there you go.
So that would be a good resource off the top of my head.
Right. Yeah, it's hard because there really is a lot. And it's, it's just such a good issue. You could just Google it.
That's fine. Yeah. And it is staralaska.com. I did just check on that. One thing that we've talked about before, Kirsten, when we've had you on the air, is Green Dot.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to bring that up again because it's actually right here together on the STAR Standing Together Against Rape page. So what is the idea of Green Dot? And is that, I know that there was some talk, is that something that could work in this community? So can you tell us a little bit about the Green Dot?
Well, right now it's a state-funded program, and it's for bystander intervention, and it's in small, safe, comfortable ways. Like, you're not running up to the person and yelling or trying to break up a fight. It's maybe you feel comfortable calling the police if you see something happening, or maybe you feel comfortable telling your neighbor, I'm concerned about you, I want to help, what can I do? It's the small ways that we can intervene as a community to build a community-wide and not tolerate what we're seeing. Like, if we all saw something going on and someone spoke up each time, there would be less of it.
Mm. Right.
Like, we want to create a culture that doesn't accept domestic violence.
Right. Because silence is kind of an answer of, okay, if you don't say anything, it kind of says to people, oh, it's accepted.
Mm.
So, being able to stand up and have a voice is really important.
Yeah, and when they do an intervention, they can put it online, and it puts a little green dot on the map, I believe.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that they'll release the training to smaller communities, because it was a pilot program when I looked into it last year. And I would love to be able to actually bring that into this community. I think that this community would be very responsive to something like that.
And so it's, again, that idea of getting away from this mentality of, oh, it's none of my business.
Yeah.
Right.
Closing the blinds, looking the other way.
I mean, and it affects the whole community. If there are children seeing domestic violence, they're taking that to school with them, and it's affecting their performance in school and maybe the way they interact with their peers and the teacher. Mm. Or, if they're having to go to the hospital, it's costing money or resources. I mean, there's a trickle effect for domestic violence. It doesn't just stay in the family. It goes out into the community. So.
All right.
And I think, the clinic has been doing a lot of stuff with ACEs, and we've been offering parenting classes up at the high school, and there was positive action in the elementary schools this year.
And the trauma-informed care movement is really important.
Yep, the clinic is moving over to trauma-informed care, and we're doing integrated visits. So when someone comes in for a medical appointment, they may see a behavioral health specialist. So I feel like there's a lot of ways where it's getting integrated into the community through the schools, through the clinic, and so I like that there's a lot of movement right now.
Okay. And just to kind of reiterate, because I know we covered it at the time, and Jamie, you mentioned it at the top of the show, that the behavioral health department itself is considerably larger than it was even just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And so there's additional funding there for? Or?
Yeah, there was a really good grant. And we've seen a rise, triple in our intakes, right? Is that the last one? We get reports, and it has been steady. We have just had a really great response.
Okay.
And it's wonderful to get this out to the community and get people in that haven't necessarily felt that they could before.
Right.
One, we're offering EMDR through one of the providers, yeah. and that is huge for people yeah. who have been victimized with sexual assault
yeah.
and domestic violence.
I spoke with Sarah Blanning about that yesterday and yeah. did an interview, and there will probably be a story coming fairly soon on KTNA about that. But the whole description of how that works and the effectiveness that it can have in this very non-traditional sort of method, it was just astounding to me. So, you know, and she did mention that it's one of those things where if one of one of the advantages of it is that it's one of those, you don't necessarily have to go into every single detail.
Right. Yeah.
You have to visualize, bring it up in your mind, but you don't have to verbalize, which is often difficult or even impossible
yeah,
for people.
Because so. The emotions, yeah.
Right.
And it changes the pathways, like we were just talking
yeah,
about before.
Exactly.
Like you get in a habit in your brain of this equals this. Well, that helps you change the pathway.
So, and that's, I don't know if the acronym iMovement, desensitization and reprogramming. Which, again, it sounded almost science fiction
right.
when I first heard about it, but it's fascinating. And I know that in addition to people who have had traumatic childhood experiences, I mean, PTSD for military veterans is yeah. another area where it's being applied as well. So some really interesting stuff going on and some opportunities for people who who maybe have you know, wanted to seek help or just now coming to the, maybe they need to just seek help or talk to someone now. So we're getting a little bit low on time, but I wanted to give y'all one last opportunity to talk about the upcoming events and the timing of those, and then contact information for people who might need to reach out.
Okay, so again, Choose Respect March and Rally is going to be April 15th. I would like to thank the Flying Squirrel, the Roadhouse, Mountain High. Anybody else who would like to be involved, please give me a call, 733-9207. The march is going to start at around noon, so the transit will be available if you want to drop your car off somewhere and
okay.
take the transit out to the Squirrel so you don't have a big parking issue.
Right.
Yeah, because that's a little complicated. And so you'll walk from the Squirrel to the Overlook, and we'll have the picture opportunity right there at 1 o'clock. Then, and also the transit will drop you off at any time. You don't have to walk the whole march if you don't want to.
Okay.
So we'll meet up at NSI at 2 o'clock, and the rally portion will be from 2 to 4. That's where we're going to have some workshops, hopefully a couple speakers, maybe on the ACEs, maybe on trauma-informed care, that sort of thing,
okay.
resiliency. And then we'll have a bunch of different community members, businesses, and organizations just promoting themselves and the fact that they support Choose Respect in our community.
Okay. All right. Well, that is just about all the time we've got for this edition of Sioux Valley Voice. My guests have been Jamie Spires and Kirsten Strolley from the Sunshine Community Health Center's Behavioral Health Department. If you missed part of the show or want to listen again, Sioux Valley Voice will rebroadcast tonight at 7 o'clock, or you can listen online anytime at ktna.org. And that contact information and web addresses for some of the various resources we discussed, we'll be posting that online as well. So if you need help, please reach out. I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening.